Hello, it is Monday, the 15th of June. Welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Andrew Jung. The war in Iran may be nearing an end. Washington and Tehran have signaled that a deal has been reached to end the conflict. We'll have more on that in our news briefing segment. On our in-depth news analysis, we'll look at what the potential halt in fighting in the Middle East could mean for the South Korean economy. For our weekly sports roundup, we take a further look at Team Korea's upcoming World Cup match against Mexico and a preview of this week's baseball action. All that and more on Korea 24. After 3.5 months, the Iran war may soon come to an end. U.S. President Donald Trump and an Iranian foreign ministry official both say a deal has been reached to end the conflict. They confirm that an official signing ceremony will take place on Friday in Switzerland. For more on the agreement to end the war and other major headlines of the day, we have in the studio with us Deputy Editor-in-Chief of KBS World's English News Service, Kim In-kyung, with us. Hello, In-kyung.
Hello, Andrew.
The U.S. and Iran have finally reached a deal to end the war that began with U.S. and Israeli strikes across Iran on February 28th. In-kyung, can you tell us more about the deal?
Sure. Trump said on social media on Sunday that an agreement to end the war with Iran is now complete and that he has authorized an end to the U.S. naval blockade of the Strait of Hormuz. In an interview with Fox News, U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance called the deal a big moment for the United States that would eliminate Iran's nuclear threat.
Is Iran on the same page regarding these terms?
Well, not entirely. According to Iranian state media, Deputy Foreign Minister Kazem Gharibabadi said a final round of negotiations will take place over a 60-day period after Tehran verifies that Washington has fulfilled its commitments under the deal, including ending hostilities, lifting the blockade, and releasing Iranian assets. But these promises were noticeably absent from Trump's announcement.
One of the most pressing questions is when the Strait of Hormuz will reopen. In-kyung, what can you tell us?
Trump said the strait would open on Friday after the deal is signed so that mines can be removed. Roughly 2,000 vessels, including 24 ships linked to South Korea, are currently stuck in the strait. The U.S.-Iran agreement is expected to allow the vessels to resume transit, but details on how the two sides will guarantee safe passage have not yet been disclosed. Potential obstacles include Iranian naval mines, possible congestion in the narrow waterway, and security risks posed by armed groups operating independently of the Iranian government.
Meanwhile, there was a lot of speculation in South Korea about what Trump's next big diplomatic move would be.
Right. Trump posted a photo over the weekend of himself and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. It was taken during the first summit in Singapore 8 years ago, and this has fueled speculation that North Korea will be the next diplomatic issue he attempts to tackle after removing matters with Iran.
But in other headlines, President Lee Jae-myung met with Pope Leo XIV at the Vatican on Monday. It was a highly anticipated meeting which took place as part of Lee's European tour. Is there a press statement yet?
According to National Security Advisor Wi Sung-nak, he explained his policy to bring peace to the Korean Peninsula. In a speech during a special mass at the Basilica of St. Paul on Sunday, he expressed hope of establishing a virtuous cycle in which peace in the peninsula contributes toward global peace, which in turn reinforces peace in the peninsula. He pledged to continue efforts to ease inter-Korean tensions, prevent accidental clashes, and restore military trust between the two sides. He also said his administration intends to do all that it can to overcome the decades-long ceasefire and replace it with a sustainable peace system.
Moving on, protesters angry about the election day ballot shortages continued their rally for the 11th day Monday. KBS talked with some of the protesters on Sunday. In-kyung, can you explain?
Sure. The protest is being held around the handball stadium in Seoul Songpa district, which served as a ballot counting center for the elections. The protesters are calling for a re-election, saying the fairness of the local elections was compromised. This is what Han Sang-bae and Kim Dong-un had to say.
First of all, regardless of the government, ruling or opposition parties, we have learned that voting is the most important thing in a democracy. So if a problem arises regarding voting, I believe we must resolve that issue first before moving on to the next one.
일단은 정부 여당 여당 다 힘 모아서
무조건 재선거를 실시해야 된다라고 하고요. 선관위는
I think that a re-election must be held unconditionally and I believe the National Election Commission should be disbanded. I believe this atmosphere should not fade away and so I would like to continue participating whenever I have the time.
Police estimated that 10,000 people were part of the rally as of 7 p.m. Sunday. There are around 200 protesters still outside the handball stadium today.
Remind us about what happened on Election Day.
Sure. During the nationwide local elections on June 3rd, at least 26 polling stations completely ran out of ballot papers. Voting hours had to be extended by nearly 6 hours until around midnight. Some voters gave up and returned home, while others were still waiting in line as television networks began broadcasting exit poll results and real-time vote tallies. This prompted concerns that voting in the affected locations was compromised. The National Election Commission has apologized for what happened, but says the ballot shortages do not warrant a re-election. The government has launched a joint probe with police and the prosecution to investigate.
In other news, President Lee has addressed the issue several times. What's the latest from him?
His latest comment came during a meeting with senior aides on Sunday, which he held via video link from Rome. He said the ballot paper shortage is a matter of infringement of suffrage and that public concerns over the issue are entirely legitimate. But he also said claims of election fraud distort the core issue. He said the controversy stemmed from an inexcusable failure by the National Election Commission. At the same time, he condemned attempts to use the incident to promote election fraud conspiracy theories, saying such claims distort the core issue and undermine legitimate public grievances. He also said some protesters had threatened police officers, intimidated bystanders, and interfered with official duties, and that those responsible for such conduct should be held accountable under the law.
In economy news, labor groups have announced their proposed minimum wage for next year. What numbers are they looking at?
Labor groups demanded a 16.3% increase in the statutory minimum wage for next year to 12,000 won, or around $7.93 per hour. The minimum wage this year is 10,321 per hour. In a press conference on Monday, the country's two umbrella unions, the Federation of Korean Trade Unions and the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions, said the average rate of increase over the past 3 years hasn't kept pace with inflation. They said that over the past 3 years, the minimum wage rose 2.37%, but inflation averaged 2.66%. The Minimum Wage Commission, which comprises representatives of labor, business, and the public interest, has begun discussions on next year's minimum wage, but the business side hasn't made its proposal yet. The commission is obligated to submit a wage proposal to the labor minister by the end of this month.
And that's all we have for today's news briefing. Thank you, Ingyo.
Thanks, Andrew.
U.S. and Iranian officials said they had reached a preliminary deal to end the war and reopen the Strait of Hormuz after nearly 4 months of fighting that created global political and economic turmoil. The two sides agreed to continue discussions on the future of Iran's nuclear program during a 60-day negotiating period. Details of the deal were not immediately released, but it will be officially signed on Friday in Switzerland. To delve into the potential peace deal, what impact it could have on the South Korean economy and jobs, which in May declined for the first time in 17 months, we are joined on the line by economics professor Yang Jun-suk from the Catholic University of Korea. Hello, Professor Yang.
Hello.
It's great to have you on the show again. So we start with our first question. U.S. President Donald Trump said on his Truth social media account that we should all, quote, let the oil flow, end of quote. With those words on Sunday evening, he announced that the U.S. had reached an agreement to end the war with Iran and open the Strait of Hormuz, with the official signing set to occur on June 19th. Shortly after, Iranian officials confirmed a deal had been reached. First, Professor Yang, what would this peace deal mean for the South Korean economy? And how long would it take for the local economy to stabilize once the deal is signed?
Okay, well, as you mentioned, details are not available yet, so we don't know what was exactly solved and what was punted down the line. But let's just assume, let's just take President Trump at his word, and there will be removal of any barriers from the Strait of Hormuz, and there will be no fee charged. And at least for now, there's not going to be any attacks on Iran or its neighbors or their production facilities. Let's first look at inflation in Korea. Now, the removal of the barriers as well as removal of uncertainty will lower oil prices, but I think not to the extent that we saw before the war. Before the war, the price per barrel of oil was for Brent was about $65 per barrel. Another source calculates that averaging all the sources, the average oil price in February of this year, accounting for inflation, was of only about $56. But during the war first, we had a lot of destruction in some of the production facilities. Also, the experts have pointed out that even if there's no damage, it will take a month or two to start production again. And then we have the demand from private or government reserves, because a lot of these companies and governments ran down their reserves during the Iran war. So chances are we will see some drop in prices. We may have seen most of it already, actually. The prices of oil have come down substantially in the yesterday. Will it go to the pre-war levels? Well, the pre-war levels were below average. So it will not normalize to that price. It'll probably end up somewhat higher. But even that will probably take at least a few months. I'm expecting if early, end of this year, if late, sometime in the middle of next year. So that will have some effect on Korean inflation. Month-to-month inflation is likely to go down. But the 12-month inflation, we will probably still maintain, see higher figures because some of the prices have risen already, and that's not going to go away anytime soon. So we have to make the distinction between inflation, which is change in prices, and high price level. And while the price level may remain high, we will see perhaps less change, less rise in prices. So inflation, especially month-to-month inflation, is likely to go down, but it will take quite a while before the 12-month inflation comes back down again. Now, having said that, some of the prices, especially for manufactured goods, will continue to rise because it's still working itself into the system. These manufactured goods prices work with a time lag because some of the oil or raw materials that they used were purchased when the prices of these things were still high. And we have to wait until that sort of works through, goes through the system before we expect the manufactured goods prices to start falling. So that may take quite a while as well. So for inflation, expect a decline in inflation rate, especially month to month. For price level, how expensive things are, it's probably not going to come down until at least next year. And then let's look at the growth level or growth rates. Now, even though Korea has been hit relatively hard with inflation, we have not been hit hard on the real economy, real growth. And that's partially because semiconductors are doing incredibly well. And also because, Korea imports of oil didn't go down by that much. Korean government and companies were very successful in coming up with alternate oil sources like Indonesia or Canada. We may have had to pay more for it, but apparently our imports were above 80% of where it was before the Iran war. So there were virtually no shortages of oil or oil-related products. So if you remember, at the end of last year, the expected Korean growth rate was 1.8%.
Mm.
Now the expected growth rate is around 2.1%. So even with the Iran war, the expected growth rate actually went up. We probably will have a slight further rise in growth rates. But what good news we had, I think we got already, at least in terms of growth rates. Now, there's another problem, which is the vast difference between, say, the semiconductor and other industries. But that's, I think, a separate problem. For those other industries, the fall in oil prices should help. But we are going basically back to where we were in January and February, and other industries, while they were hopeful, wasn't doing that well. So we'll be going back to that position. Now, exchange rates. I don't think the oil prices are now the most important factor behind exchange rates. It's actually the stock market. What we saw in March was that because of the higher oil prices and because how many it affect the trade account of Korea, we saw some effect on the exchange rates. But the biggest effect of the exchange rates had to do with foreign investment inflows into Korea's stock market or going out from Korea's stock market. And that, I think, is likely to remain the same. So, the end of the war, I think, will have a slight effect on strengthening the Korean won. But the fundamental factor will remain how much dollars are flowing in and out of Korean stock market. And that, in turn, depends on how much foreigners are buying and selling in the stock market. I think that will be the most critical component. And right now, I don't see the oil, the good news from oil prices undoing whatever effect the foreign investors are having in the stock market. So we will probably see a slight strengthening of the yuan, but not anything that brings us back to, say, mid-1400s, at least not in the short term.
Mm. So basically, the Iran war's uncertainty has been lifted somewhat, meaning inflation for the short term will be reduced, but longer term inflation will be kept in place. There will be a bump in growth. There will be a slight strengthening of the Korean won, but the effects there will be relatively muted. On the back of an agreement between the U.S. and Iran to end their war, the benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index, KOSPI, spiked 5.2% on Monday. So the stock market reacting positively to close at 8,545.98. Professor Yang Jun-suk, do you think the KOSPI will surpass the 9,000 mark?
Well, I think it will, but whether it'll stay there is another question. But I think the market has the momentum right now to pass 9,000. I'm not sure if it has the lasting power to stay above 9,000. If we look at what's happening right now, most of the growth in the stock market is due to the semiconductor stocks, and they have not really been affected that much by the Iran war. But because the end of the Iran war will probably weaken inflationary pressure, it might reduce the possibility of U.S. Fed hiking interest rates, and that may have a helpful effect on the AI rally and semiconductor demand. So it may help in that way, but I don't expect that effect to be very big. Also, the other industries other than semiconductors, they may gain a little because oil prices will become stabilized, will fall. But again, I don't think that will have a major effect. So it will have a slightly upward effect for KOSPI, but I don't expect this to be a major effect on the KOSPI index.
Amid the protracted war in Iran, South Korea's employment fell last month for the first time in 17 months as manufacturing jobs dropped sharply and youth employment continued to weaken. According to the Ministry of Data and Statistics, the number of people aged 15 and older who were employed in May here in South Korea marked a little over 29.12 million people, which was 40,000 fewer than a year earlier. The last time the country reported a decline in the number of jobs was in December 2024, following former President Yoon Suk-yeol's martial law declaration. The political turmoil at the time, of course, hurt the economy. Professor Yang Jun-sup, what caused this more recent decline in May this year, and how has the prolonged war in Iran affected the job market in South Korea?
Okay, well, it seems like the major contributor to the employment figures this time, I wouldn't call this a bad figure, but it is definitely lower than where it was last year, May. And it does seem to be on a slight downward trend. But if you look at some of the breakdowns, if you look at people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, their employment rate didn't change all that much or rose. People in their 30s, their employment rate remained the same. People in their 40s and 50s, their employment rate actually went up, though a lot of that had to do with falling demographics than increasing the number of jobs. The age groups where you saw the decline in employment rate was 15 to 29-year-olds. That fell by 2.4 percentage points. And people who are 60 or older, that fell by 0.4 percentage points. But interestingly, they have another statistic, people over 65, and their employment rate actually went up. So this only affected people between 60 and 64. So the decline in jobs, the decline in the employment rate, rise in unemployment rate, seems to be concentrated on those two age groups, people between 15 to 29 and people between 60 and 64. Does that have something to do with the Iran war? Possibly, because the biggest industry that suffered a loss of jobs was manufacturing. They lost 140,000 jobs, down 3.2 percentage points. So it does seem like the Iran war or the slow economy that we've seen in the last 18 months or so is still affecting the Korean economy. If you look at full-time versus part-time jobs, full-time jobs fell slightly. People working more than half the week also fell significantly. So it does seem to be becoming a tougher job market.
So certainly not good. Especially if you look in the details. The decline in employment comes amid, of course, the boom in semiconductors driven by artificial intelligence. Professor Yang, how much of a positive will surging semiconductor exports from South Korea have on the local job market here?
Probably not much. I think people do not realize how little job creation there is in the semiconductor market. Remember, semiconductor is mostly capital intensive production. So you use a lot of machinery, very few people, and what people you use usually have to be very highly educated, even for production line jobs. The semiconductor jobs account for about 4% of manufacturing jobs. And manufacturing jobs account for about 15% of total jobs in Korea. So putting that together, the entire semiconductor industry only accounts for about 0.6% of Korean jobs. There's relatively little so-called downstream firms that use semiconductors for their production because we export most of it. So there's no Korean firms which depend on those semiconductors, at least there's very few of them. And there's very few upstream firms, the companies which provide raw material and intermediate goods for semiconductors, because semiconductor itself is an intermediate good. So there's very relatively little link effect that creates job creation in industries that are related to semiconductors. Also, number of jobs created per investment is relatively low for manufacturing because relatively low for semiconductors because semiconductors are a very capital intensive industry. Manufacturing in general, if you make 1 billion won investment, that creates about 4.85 jobs. But for the semiconductor industry, if you have 1 billion won investment, it only creates 1.86 jobs. Semiconductors is great for the economy. It's great for GDP growth, not really great for creating jobs. The money that's earned by the semiconductor industry spreads through more consumption, that may help. But in terms of just jobs itself, semiconductors does not really add a lot of new jobs to the economy.
So not a lot of bang for the buck there. What also stood out from the latest government data was the sharp decline in youth employment. The number of people among people aged 15 to 29, the age group that we've been talking about a few times here today, fell by 255,000 from a year earlier, the largest decline since January 2021, when we were all under the COVID-19 pandemic. A senior statistics official here said the recent hiring trend in which companies prefer experienced candidates have scaled back large-scale recruitment, has led to a decline in employment among people in their 20s. Professor Gyeong, so there appears to have been some negative mal effects against the people in this young age group. How do you view the situation, and what advice would you give policymakers to improve youth employment?
Okay, whenever economy is tougher, you tend to prefer experienced workers over new workers. Other than semiconductors, because other industries are not doing as well, and you might argue that other industries are really in a sort of a mediocre situation. I wouldn't call it as much far as a slowdown or a recession, but it's not dynamic either. So that creates a preference for experienced workers. But also, the job market itself, it's a mediocre job market besides a few certain industries like semiconductors, automobiles, defense, weaponry industry, and maybe finance. But also on the job supply side, because all the troubles, labor troubles that we've been having because of the Samsung Electronics strike, and the strikes that we've seen in related to other industries, that may be cutting job creation on the company side. Then on the supply side, young people who are trying to get jobs, young people want good jobs, but they're shrinking. And we saw the manufacturing jobs going down. We saw that the IT jobs are not being really created all that much. And AI, I think, is also having a discouraging effect on both supply and demand side. On the demand for labor side, people are not sure if they will need as many workers in the future. So they might cut down on hiring, especially younger workers who has to stay in the company for a long time. On the supply side, the younger people, they don't know which area to go to because they don't know what AI is going to replace. So that I think also has an additional effect. Young people want to make sure that they get into a good job track. That means not only searching for a good company, but searching for a career track that they can feel relatively confident that will exist beside AI and not be replaced by AI.
That's all we have for today's in-depth news analysis. That was Professor Yang Jun-sup from the Catholic University of Korea. Thank you, as always, Professor.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock Market Update. the benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index spiked 422.36 points, or 5.2%, on Monday to close at 8,545.98. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ gained 4.98 points, or 0.48%, to close at 1,034.03. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets and handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello there, Andrew.
What is our first story today?
A Mexican man who made a racist slant eyes gesture during a World Cup match last week had to step down from his position as head of an engineering association following widespread criticism.
A few things to unpack there. Dan, can you give us a good summary of how and when this incident happened?
Sure thing. Ulises Fernando Bernard Miramontes, the president of the College of Geomatics and Topographic Surveying Engineers of the state of Jalisco, drew strong backlash for making a slant-eyed gesture widely recognized as a racist act used to mock Asians by referring to the shape of their eyes, and then laughing it off during last week's World Cup match during Thursday, local time in Mexico, between South Korea and the Czech Republic in Guadalajara, Mexico. The video captured by a South Korean YouTuber sitting in front of him was posted on social media and quickly went viral on various platforms, sparking severe online outrage from both South Korean and Mexican communities who condemned the act. The clips and captured image were also carried on various media outlets around the world.
Obviously, it's a gesture that's not going to win you many friends. Did he have anything to say about this self-inflicted damage to his reputation immediately after the controversy blew up online?
Well, on Sunday, Bernard posted an apology written in both English and Spanish on his social media account, apologizing to Koreans, the Korean YouTuber, as well as his fellow Mexicans, saying that he has taken time to reflect on what happened, adding that he wants to acknowledge that the situation generated a wide range of reactions and he wanted to express sincere apologies.
I guess some of our listeners might be wondering how fast the apology was made and if it was enough to calm the waters a little bit.
Well, maybe it came too late, considering that it didn't take long for angry netizens to find out Bernal's identity after the clip featuring his actions went viral. Earlier on Sunday, Seokyung-deok, a professor at Sungkyunkwan University, urged Bernal to publicly apologize and even called on FIFA to take measures to prevent a recurrence. The Engineering Guild issued a statement on Saturday saying it would internally review the matter, and in a recent interview, a spokesperson for the guild said Bernal was removed from office.
Hoping the next story is a little bit more pleasant. What do you have for us, Dan?
After facing massive public outrage and boycotts following a controversial marketing campaign that evoked painful memories of a brutal military crackdown on pro-democracy protesters in 1980, Shinsegae Group Chair Jung Yong-jin and Starbucks Korea employees announced plans to take part in an educational program aimed at improving historical awareness and societal sensitivity.
I would argue more learning is usually something good. What do we know about these educational programs for the group's employees so far?
Shinsegae announced Monday the program, part of efforts to prevent a recurrence of the incident. Group Chair Jung, those working in E-Mart affiliates and Starbucks, would receive the training by watching educational videos. The coffee chain store employees will sit through the program at their respective locations next Monday. All stores nationwide will close early at 3 p.m. on that day for the program. While employees and executives of E-Mart affiliates will complete the same program online over a two-week period starting July 1st.
Watching educational videos is probably not something an office worker or a floor manager at E-Mart wants to do at 3 p.m. on a weekday. I guess, although in this context, we realize maybe this is a little different considering what has happened to Starbucks recently. Do we know the content of the programs and who will be leading these sessions?
Yes, we do. The history awareness lecture will be led by Woo Jae-yeon, a history professor from Sungkyunkwan University. He will review major events in South Korea's modern and contemporary history since the 1950s and discuss how they should be understood. A separate social sensitivity training conducted by Koo Jung-woo, a sociology professor at the same university, will help look at how companies should consider social issues such as history, labor, gender, and human rights in marketing and other corporate activities.
Considering the magnitude of what has happened, is there a certain level of public backlash that's still lingering around?
While the initial shock passed, there's still a great level of anger lingering over the incident. Measures like shutting nationwide operations with early closures, that's an unprecedented measure, as Starbucks Korea stores never took such action since it opened in the country in 1999. But even such gestures may not be enough. It will take a long time and a lot of dedicated efforts to return to how things used to be.
Obviously, or maybe, this could be a step in the right direction. But are there other measures planned by the coffee giant and the conglomerate?
Yes, reportedly there are more measures in store, including plans to overhaul marketing approval procedures, introducing a social sensitivity checklist covering history, commemorative dates, politics, disasters, military issues, gender, violence, and hate expressions, too.
It's probably in everyone's interest that nothing like this happens again. But now to our final story. What is it, Dan?
New malware targeting South Korean PC users has been discovered in emails impersonating Microsoft's security team.
Impersonating global brands, it's not a new method in terms of hacking or other illicit activities online. Dan, can you tell us more about this phishing campaign?
Sure thing. On Monday, cybersecurity firm Genians warned of a spear phishing campaign using fake Microsoft security notices about repeated generation of one-time passcodes to induce anxiety and then trick users into downloading malicious email attachments.
And I might know the answer to this question, actually, but how dangerous is this particular malware?
It takes control over a lot of things. Once installed, the attacker can remotely control various functions in the victim's PC, including file uploads, downloads, microphone recording, keystroke logging, and much more.
Is the attack linked to any particular hacking group?
The attack closely aligns with the structure and tactics of a backdoor used by the North Korea Link Group that was revealed last May. Genius identified the malware as Narwhal Rat, a remote access Trojan linked to North Korean hacking group APT-37.
And I guess listeners who are concerned might be wondering if we have any tips or recommendations on avoiding falling prey to this malware attack.
Well, the cybersecurity firm pointed out that this attack may continue to be used in similar variant forms in the future. So other than conventional malicious code files detection measures, Genians recommends strengthening behavior-based detection systems to monitor abnormal executions.
And that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thank you for bringing us all the stories, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's time now for Sports Roundup, your weekly look at all the action from the big wins and tough losses to the stories on and off the field. Joining us now on the line to help us do that is Yoo Ji-ho, the sports beat writer for Yonhap News. Gio, great to have you here again on the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here too.
So I guess we have to talk about the biggest sports competition going on in the world right now. That, of course, being the World Cup. South Korea defeated Czechia 2-1 in a come-from-behind victory last week. Exciting game. South Korea will be playing now co-host Mexico in what we all expect to be a tougher game this week. Gio, could you give us a preview? I know we did this last week, but let's do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a win over Mexico will all but guarantee a spot in the knockout stage for Korea with 6 points. The final match will be against the underdog South Africa next week. So, you know, assuming Korea will win that one as well, beating Mexico would put him in a really good spot to, you know, not only get to the knockout stage, but actually do so as a group winner in Group A. But obviously Mexico will be very tough to handle, especially with the partisan and hostile crowd behind them at Estadio Guadalajara. It's going to be a 10 a.m. Friday kickoff in Korean time. Korea, obviously, their players are feeling great about themselves after the come-from-behind win over Czechia last week. They had some light recovery workout the next day. Had the full day off, actually, to spend some time with family and friends that are in Mexico with them. That was a Saturday local time. and back to work Sunday afternoon, or I guess this morning, Monday morning in Korean time. And some more serious tactical work will take place tomorrow. So I think even from the Mexican perspective, this is going to be their biggest match of the group stage as well. You know, they also won their first match, beating South Africa 2-0. And, you know, they're going to be coming in thinking, hey, we got to beat Korea to, you know, try to win the group with potentially undefeated record, because they played Czechia in the last one. They're favored in that one as well. So, it's going to be, again, I think the biggest match for both teams, and one they really will test Korea's mettle in the group stage.
Mm. So, again, the game against Czechia was certainly not an easy game, but this game will be much tougher than the first game that Korea played. Korea almost defeated Mexico in their friendly match last September. So they've played each other recently. Before, Mexico tied the game at 2 during injury time in the second half of that game. But South Korea may have a much different challenge this time around. Gio, what can you tell us?
Yeah, so that friendly, and also the one before that, Korea defeated U.S. 2-0. This was their kind of two-match short, the trip to the U.S. And that was probably the best stretch the South Korea played under Ho Myung-bo, I guess before the World Cup anyway. But Korea, I think should have won that match against Mexico before conceding the last-minute goal during stoppage time, like I said. But Korean experts and pundits believe they're going to get a lot more determined Mexican side this time. You know, they're going to be playing in a World Cup match in front of their home crowd with the top spot in the group at stake. And, you know, Mexico might not have looked all that impressive against the 9-man South Africa. So they had two players actually, getting the red card treatment in the opener. Mexico only, I guess, you know, relatively speaking anyway, they only managed 2 goals in that win. But, you know, people believe they might have been conserving their energy a little bit to kind of save themselves up for Korean match. And they can be really dangerous on the right side of the attack, led by players like Brian Gutierrez and Roberto Alvarado on the right side. And obviously, that's going to be the left side on the Korean defense. And defenders have not really been tested much on their side. And they must be on their toes against some really skilled Mexican attackers in this upcoming match.
A further disadvantage to Team Korea could be a few injuries that the team has suffered recently. Gio, could you give us a rundown of the injury updates on these couple of Korean players?
Yeah, some really encouraging news, actually, on the injury front. First, the center back Kim Tae-hyun is recovering nicely from an ankle injury that he picked up during a training session last week. So initially, the team said he could be out for the remainder of the group stage, but the prognosis is a lot better now, so he should be available for either the Mexico match or the finale against South Africa. Now, he's not a starting caliber center back, but he's only one of just 2 left-footed center backs on the team, alongside Lee Ki-hyuk, who ended up playing the entire match against Czechia. So Kim Tae-hyun is someone who can spell Lee Ki-hyuk, potentially get a start against South Africa, depending on how the Mexico match plays out. Now, another player coming back from an ankle injury, there's midfielder Pae Jun-ho, who picked up that injury during a friendly match in late May. He's a very skilled guy, attacking midfielder, who can really be a game-changing force off the bench. Again, he's not a starting caliber guy in that position. Korea have enough talent in that area of the squad, guys like Lee Kang-in, Lee Jae-sung, or Hwang Hee-chan, they're going to get the bulk of action. But Pae Jun-ho could be a useful option coming off the bench, and he's coming back. He's working his way back from his own ankle injury.
Hopefully, these players will provide a little more depth to the team. So best of luck to Team Korea and, of course, to Team Mexico as well, hoping for a clean and injury-free match this week. But we move on to baseball. I had a great week with my Seoul LG Twins going 5-1. But elsewhere in the KBO, we have the Doosan Bears having the best record in the league so far this month in June. The Bears, I hear, will have a tough week ahead with back-to-back series against the league's 2 best teams, including my team, the aforementioned LG Twins, and one other team. Gio, tell us more.
Yeah, so the Bears have the best record in June so far in the KBO. 8 wins, 3 losses, and 1 tie. But, you know, they're going to have a really stern test this week. They open the new week with a 3-game series against the number 2 ranked KT Wiz, followed by another 3-game set at Jamshil Stadium against your Angel Twins, still the best record in the KBO, the only team with 40-plus wins at this point in the season. Now, the Bears are in 5th place, but they're half a game behind the Kia Tigers for 4th and half a game ahead of the Hanwha Eagles, who are in 6th place. And these three teams just, you know, keep switching places almost on a daily basis. And, you know, right now, so far this month anyway, the Bears have the best ERA in the league, 2.67. And no other team has a team ERA below 3 at this point. But you know what? They've not done well against either the Wiz or the Twins. They've gone 2-4 against both of the teams so far this season.
An ERA, a team ERA of 2.67 is certainly very impressive. What are some other matchups in the KBO to watch out for this week?
Yeah, so we've got a series coming up between the two bottom feeders that's going to be on the weekend. The Kiwoom Heroes hosting the Lotte Giants at Kochak Skydome in Seoul starting Friday. Now, the Heroes began last week in the league cellar. They were trailing the Giants by 1.5 games, but the Heroes went 4-2 for the week, including a 3-game sweep of the Hanwha Eagles. And the Giants, in the meantime, they went in the opposite direction. They went 2-4 to drop to last place. Mm. So the Heroes are trying to avoid becoming the first teams in the 10-team structure to finish last in 4 consecutive seasons. They've done it 3 years in a row. Lotte Giants might help them out this year. Who knows? Now, the Eagles fell from 4th to 6th in the standings over the week after getting swept by the Heroes. They're going to look for a bounce back with 3 games against 7th place NC Dinos and then 3 more against number 3 team Samsung Lions. But the Eagles have really struggled against the Lions this year, beating them just once in 6 meetings so far. That's the worst mark against any opponent for the Hanwha Eagles.
Well, the Eagles at least got to the Korean Series last season. The fans in Busan and perhaps for the Kiwoom Heroes have been having a very bad stretch of a few years at least. So best of luck to those teams as well. We move on to now golf, to our final sport of the day, where in the LPGA, Korean players Choi Hae-jin and Kim Hyo-ju finished as the runner-up at a team event held in Michigan that left Choi still searching for her first title after well over 100 tournaments. Gio, can you tell us more?
Yeah, sure. Well, Choi Hae-jin and Kim Hyo-ju finished 2 strokes behind the champions from the U.S., Gina Kim and Yana Wilson, at the Dow Championship out at Midland Country Club in Michigan. Choi and Kim shot 15 on the par. They had a bogey-free round of 5-under-65, but they just ran into a very hot team of Kim and Wilson, who had 6 birdies and an eagle in the final round. So Choi and Kim began the final round with a 1-stroke lead over Kim and Wilson, as they were trying to become the second straight Korean team to win the Dow Championship after the tandem of Im Jin-hee and Lee So-mi won it last year. Choi and Kim went up by 2 at 11-under-par after Choi's birdie at the second hole, but the Americans got back within 1 with a birdie on the next hole. And then they grabbed the lead, their first lead, when Gina Kim holed up from the fairway for the Eagle on the par for 5th. That took them to 12 on the par. So these two teams made their turn at 13 on the par, but the Americans picked up 4 birdies on the back 9 coming home en route to their come-from-behind victory. South Koreans, in the meantime, managed only 2 birdies coming home. Now, Kim Hyo-ju is a 9-time winner. She's got 2 titles this year already. But Choi Hae-jin, she was going for her first victory in her 114th career start. You know, she's won 12 times on the Korean Tour. She's already proven herself here. But on the LPGA Tour, it's been a pretty tough stretch for her. She ended up setting for her 4th career runner-up finish at this time.
I'm sure Ms. Choi Hae-jin is frustrated, but better luck to our Korean ladies next time, especially again to Ms. Choi Hae-jin in our next competition. But that's all we have for today's sports roundup. That was sports reporter Yoo Ji-ho from Yonhap News bringing us the latest. As always, thank you, Gio.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And that brings us to the end of today's edition of Korea 24. Just a reminder, you can always listen to Korea 24 on various apps, KBS Kong, KBS World Radio, and KBS World Radio On Air at 7:10 p.m. Korea Standard Time every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow. I've been your host, Andrew Jung. As always, thank you for listening. Goodbye.